At the beginning of ordinary time, when we strive to let the gospel order our lives, we hear in the gospel today about the first of Jesus' signs and how his disciples began to believe in him. I don't know about you, but I often feel like I'm beginning to believe in Jesus. One moment, I feel strong in faith, and the next moment, I'm struggling with selfishness or doubt or something. So let's see how the scriptures today help to bring order to the beginnings of our faith. The first reading from Isaiah prophesies a time when the Lord will give his people a new name, a new identity, a new beginning, and when he will marry his chosen and beloved, when God marries. In the book of Genesis, God created for 6 days and then rested on the Sabbath, when, implicitly in Genesis, there was a wedding of the first man and the first woman. In the Gospel of John, John very consciously evokes those 7 days of creation at the beginning of his gospel in naming the first days of Jesus' ministry, which culminates today in this gospel, the seventh day, with a wedding. We need to pay attention then to see who is the man and who is the woman here. And of course, John helps us when he shows Jesus calling his mother of all people woman. No Jewish son would ever say that to his mother without getting his face slapped. The Gospel of John is alerting us to the fact that Jesus is the new Adam and Mary the new Eve. John tells us that the wedding at Cana revealed the beginning of Jesus' glory. Not yours, not mine, not the apostles, but Jesus' glory. What was Jesus' glory? Further in the gospel, John proclaims that the glory of Jesus was his suffering and death on the cross. That was his glory. On the cross, Jesus revealed himself as the bridegroom, willing to suffer and die to make his bride, the church, virginal pure, beautiful in every conceivable grace. That's why the wedding feast at Cana reveals the beginning of Jesus' glory. It reveals Jesus as the true bridegroom, providing for his bride superabundantly. There were 6 stone jars that were used for ceremonial washings. Ceremonial washings. This sign miracle is revealing his future hour, his hour on the cross, when he will wash all believers in his own blood. Each of those stone jars held 20 to 30 gallons. So Jesus made somewhere around 120 to 180 gallons of wine. That's enough. But this water turned wine is really a sign of the blood and water that gushed forth from the side of Christ, of the grace that will flow from his side on the cross to wash us, his beloved, clean on the inside. That's true glory, not to win a contest or to win someone's praise, but to win the battle over sin and all the evil that lies within our hearts. That's glory worth fighting for. And every bridegroom out there, present or future, is solemnly charged with the duty to fight the battle against sin so that your bride too will be washed clean, free from even the influence of evil. This gospel is not some cute story about providing liquor at a wedding. It's about Jesus supplying and revealing to every groom that your charge is to suffer and die for your bride in order to lift her out of the muck of sin and closer to God. Jesus, the bridegroom, does this for us. And it's what he calls us to do as well. And notice who else is at the center of the bridegroom's sacrifice for his bride, the mother of Jesus. Mary says to Jesus, "They have no wine." In other words, what we've always relied on to get us by has finally run out. The ways of the world that continually entice us and seduce us have run dry. What are some of the things that we do to help us deal with this world? Maybe it's pornography. It's not love, it's lust, and it's always destructive. Maybe it's alcoholism, or workaholism, or uncontrolled anger, and lots of other ways that we try to cope with this world in unhealthy and sinful ways. And the mother of Jesus says to us, that's not real wine. Real wine doesn't drug us. Real wine brings joy. The wine of Jesus brings freedom from the sin that clings to us. Mary says to Jesus, they have no wine. They have only distractions. They have nothing to free them. They don't know what true joy is. They're bound by the lies and the deceits of this world. Help them. They're empty. Help them. And the miracle that he works is the sign of his future hour on the cross, where he makes a super abundance of his kind of wine that cleanses from inside and brings true joy and true freedom from sin. Mary understands this, which is why she says to the servants, do whatever he tells you. And she says to us, do whatever he tells you. Please, just listen to him. Listen to my son. He knows your soul. He knows everything about you. Listen to him. And our second reading from 1 Corinthians teaches us what happens when we do listen to him. St. Paul writes to each individual who listens to him, the manifestation of the Spirit is given for some benefit. Every baptized person in this room has been given a gift, which St. Paul calls a manifestation of the Spirit. It's not given to make you feel good about yourself. It's given for a particular benefit to the whole body of Christ. And Paul then lists 9 different manifestations of the Spirit: wisdom, knowledge, faith, gifts of healing, mighty deeds, prophecy, discernment of spirits, varieties of tongues, and interpretation of tongues. Everyone has one or more of those gifts. Which do you have? Are you using it to benefit the church? If you're not sure, I'd love to help you discern that. And for future reference, here at Newman, we're planning for the upcoming Easter season, throughout the Easter season, a Life in the Spirit seminar that has as one of its purposes to help participants to know and use the manifestations of the Spirit in their lives. I want to just close with a personal note. I think one of my gifts is that of faith. Some years ago, my dad was sick in the hospital for almost 3 months, and we prayed long and hard for him. And it was easy to wonder where God was in all this. And I struggled with that too. But faith told me that Christ was healing my dad, maybe in ways unknown to me or anyone else. And I remember one night just banging on the doors of heaven for Dad. And a response came back rather strongly. Okay, Dan, it's time to start praying in thanksgiving for what I am doing for your dad. If you believe in me, then trust me. So here's the homework for the week. Bang on the doors of heaven this week and ask to know the gifts that you have been given for the manifestation of the Spirit. And ask for the courage to use them for the good of the church.